So maybe a little bit of trickery on the internet there, Vivek, but I think we should be okay. Let me make
Okay.
sure I'm live in the right places, and we should be all right. Okay, I think we're ready to go. So welcome everybody to Founders Focus. This is episode 4 of a new series I'm running, where I'm interviewing, well, getting up close and personal with the CEOs of the HR and recruiting tech businesses that are changing the way in which we work. So these are going to be deep dive, personal, biographical interviews with the leaders of these companies. I think we can learn a lot from people who are leading businesses and have a vision about what the world of work looks like. And we're going to find that out through these conversational formats. Anyway, before we kick off, as always, we do a bit of sound checking just to make sure everyone can hear us okay. We're on Crowdcast here, so I think basically we seem to be live on that channel, which is great. We are also multicasting, I hope, on LinkedIn Live. So if you can hear me on LinkedIn, please give me some indication that we're live and we're okay. Just give me a like, dislike, something like that, to make sure you can see and hear us okay. We're also broadcasting in Facebook as well. We've got 4,000 members in that group of motivated brain food folks. So hopefully you can hear us there as well. If you can, please give us a thumbs up. Again, thumbs down. I want to see whether we can see that action going on. Okay, cool. We seem to be getting some sort of responses here, which is great. People seem to be hearing us fine. So we should be ready to go. We are speaking with Vivek Ravi Shankar today, CEO of HackerRank. Vivek, there's no disguising it. We know each other. We've known each other for a little while. So great to see you again, great to see you well. First question is always the case. What did you have to cancel in order to come on to Founders Focus today, Vivek?
Yeah, no, firstly, thank you for having me part of the show. It's been a while since we caught up in person. I think I would probably say that for most people, but it's super, super good to be in the show. What did I cancel? I'm actually not making this up. I actually canceled my lunch because
Why?
I thought it would be the food or the energy for the day. So I hope like you ask really good questions, and I hope I can actually answer that actually satisfies you and the audience.
Now I feel like super guilty, Vivek, because here we have a starving CEO who probably doesn't have time for lunch at all, and he's had to
Yeah.
cancel the one meal he has per day in order to join us for this show.
But this is the brain food. So let's keep going.
The brain is enough. I agree. Well, Vivek, it's great to have you with us. Always fascinating to get a CEO in the room, particularly one that is super busy. Give us a bit of a snapshot as to typically what is happening in your day. I mean, how do you CEO HackerRank? Like, what happens, man?
Yeah, I think the day is usually just filled with like fighting fires, starting from the highest priority one, and then like you work through your list to figure out what's a low priority one. The way that I try to at least like work on is to make sure that I have a routine. Right after I wake up in the morning, I make sure that I like do that routine regularly. And then one piece of the routine is to decide like one thing that you want to accomplish today, just like one, and that can be about like creating a deck that's upcoming for a customer meeting, or like doing like research on a particular thing, whatever it is, like just like one thing that you want to accomplish. And then like you just like zoom into, okay, let's figure out like what the top fires that you need to fight, and just like go all the way down from the high priority to the low ones. That's starts about 7-ish, ends about 9:30 p.m. So that's kind of like a typical day.
Let me stop you right there, Vivek, because you've just given us like a productivity hack, which all of us can really adopt today, which is before you open your inbox and get involved in interrupts. Because guess what? As soon as you open your inbox, folks, what is going to happen is that you're immediately lost control of your day, right?
Yeah,
Immediately. You got
that's right.
too many things straight away. It's going to just demand your time. Your plans are out the window. Make sure you do something before you open email. Like you have to have that one thing, as you say, Vivek. Sometimes it's useful to have that written down, like on the night before or something, so that
Yeah.
when you wake up, just knock that thing out, and then you can get on the rest of the day, and it doesn't turn into that lagging thing that you had to do and never did.
Yeah, absolutely. It also makes you feel better about yourself that otherwise it just feels like you've just, all you've done today is just like gone through a bunch of meetings. Sure, you would have actually solved different problems, but it actually makes you feel better that, like, you know, the one thing that you set out to accomplish today, which is going to help you make progress towards the company's mission, that you've been able to do it. And the other thing that I would say as a nuance to that is not just emails, even like social media and others. Before you open up any app or anything, just make sure that you actually stay clear and be very clear on like what is the one thing that you want to accomplish. Even social media can completely open up the floodgates and distract and even have like a pretty bad start to the day sometimes.
Yeah, so this is interesting because the psychology is so important to productivity, isn't it? And I think one of the big challenges of being a leader, because you are often firefighting all the time. I spoke to your number four CEO here so far. So we had Steve Lucas at iSIMS. We had Hanno Renner at Personio. People, you know, similar young people who've gone to the top. And they are all saying the same. It's like the morale, the management of your own morale is like a very important factor, which is true for any worker. But the CEO doesn't have necessarily like people to lean on, right? Like you have to find your own resources sometimes. So you're saying that almost for a morale point of view, it is useful to have one achievement done before the day starts. It's June. It's something ticked off, gone, boxed off.
Yeah, actually, I would say I fully agree. I think the handling, managing your mental psyche is probably the hardest part for the CEO. Because like you mentioned, who do I go and vent to? At least like if you have a manager, you can like go and vent to a manager saying, hey, this is broken, that is broken. If I go to the board, who's technically not the manager, but like you can almost think of yourself as like being responsible to the board and stuff. The answer is going to be pretty standard. Okay, but like you're the CEO, go fix the problem. I would say the one nuance to that is I don't necessarily complete the task before opening the inbox because like, you know, some tasks can take like 2.5 hours and I need to like block the day. But I'm very clear on what I want to accomplish that day, the one thing that I want to accomplish that day. So for example, today we have a large customer meeting that's actually coming up, a large financial services customer meeting that's actually coming up. And the one thing that I want to accomplish today is to make sure that I complete my portion of the deck in like a solid state that I believe can be impressive to go ahead and present to this customer. And I am fighting through a bunch of fires like through the day, but if I complete this, I think it's a feeling of accomplishment that, hey, you've done and you've made progress towards it.
You know what? I don't know. Do you know a guy called Nir Eyal? I think he's the he's a productivity coach. And I've started reading some of his stuff, and particularly he's very good. He talks about Twitter, but he's actually a really good person to follow on certain social media because he actually puts value in there rather than nonsense. I just wonder in this era where we've all pushed to remote. Theoretically, we've all now got more distance from the people we might traditionally have asked for support. We all need to develop these productivity skills suddenly, don't we? Suddenly, loads of people are effectively working without the proximity of management. And guess what? It's on you. You have to be the person that coaches yourself to get to this a point of productivity. Otherwise, you descend into this chaotic state where it's stressful. You wake up, you go to bed, and you literally, the entire day may not as well have happened because you're no further forward. Super interesting. What about coaching, Vivek? You mentioned CEO. It's lonely at the top. That's a cliche and it's a bit of a joke, but it's also true. I had a good conversation with Mikhail Cabral last week. He was the ex-CEO of Easy Recruit before they sold to iSIMS. And he said, I have a coach. And he said, yeah, I've been using an exec coach for 6 years. And he said, the best investment ever. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, is it an idea that C-level needs somebody like outside of the business, outside of the structure, no investment in, you know, not invested in the business in any way? They just like their job is just to make you optimal and balanced and what have you. Have you thought about this? And is this a concept that what are your thoughts on the concept of someone like that?
I think the concept is completely makes sense. Very, very critical for you to have exec coaches. And I don't have one yet, but I am in the process of figuring it out. because I think the most important thing is you need to have the right rapport with the exec coach, and the person needs to understand you. You need to understand, I mean, the chemistry is like super, super critical. So that's one thing that, so I'm basically in the process of interviewing a few people to see like, you know, is this something that, you know, you and I can work together. And also there are like certain values that you establish for yourself, and like, you know, the exec coach needs to have that needs to be aligned. So just from a conceptual perspective, totally agree. I think the value, in my opinion, that an exec coach can bring to the CEO is almost like acting as a mirror, because sometimes you are just caught up with your own version of how you look at things. And, you know, this is the, I don't know what the, it's maybe called confirmation bias, which is once you view certain things, you then like go ahead and like try to find evidence to make basically support your viewpoint. And then like, you know, it starts to stir up to become like a giant ball, as opposed to like, you know, viewing it in a much more objective way. So I think like an exec coach can really help you understand, like act as a mirror for you and get to the root of why you're feeling certain things. And not, it's probably bordering a little bit like, you know, what you would do, like, you know, therapy kind of like, yeah, session on this, like really helping you understand yourself or like why you have come to this conclusion. And I think that's very, very helpful. So yeah, no, I think it's a great investment. It's something that I need to make as well.
You know what one thing I've been seeing on this is that the barrier between personal development, self-help, mental health, those barriers are becoming super fuzzy now. Like you rewind back, you know, 5 years or so, certainly 10 years, if you said you had mental health issues, people would be actually sometimes quite frightened to hear that. And they would not know how to react and think, oh my goodness, what do I do? But now it's like, okay, the mental health is completely connected with things like morale and productivity, yeah, and effectiveness. Because if your mind is not in good shape, you're not going to be able to execute as a leader. And in fact, you might be kind of become a dangerous sort of presence in the business sometimes if your mental health is not in the right shape, because you have overwhelming executive power and your decision making needs to be on point. So I think that coaching, exec therapy, you know, those things are kind of blending together. But the idea of someone who is almost a conciliere type figure, you know, just a wise person that's sitting on the shoulder and giving you some a perspective, that may be a figure that everyone could do with, irrespective of level or seniority.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think we need to view the all the concepts that we discuss relative to how the world has actually changed over time. I think mental health or therapy and things of those lines were a bit frowned upon, or like, you know, there was like a social stigma associated with it maybe 10, 15 years back. But like also 10, 15 years back, there was no Instagram or Facebook or like any of these social media tools for you to like go ahead and do it. So the world has definitely changed quite a bit, which means the world has changed. And there are also certain aspects of humans and others also that need to change more due to that. And I think there's always like a FOMO, fear of missing out. There's this like heavy amount of imposter syndrome. You know, you need to achieve like, you know, ABC before you're 25. I mean, there's all of these things like, you know, amplified tremendously because of like, you know, the social media and other pieces of technology. So I think like to combat that, I think mental health, the investment in your mental health is like, you know, very, very critical. And like I mentioned, I think it's most of the times that I've found it to be very, very useful, like, you know, even when I'm like interviewing coaches and trying to like understand who is going to work well or not, it's mostly just being a true reflection of why I am making a particular decision or why I am thinking on that in that way, and getting to the actual core or actual root of it, which is very hard. It's possible, but it's very hard for you to do it on your own, because there's always like, you know, I've read this somewhere, there's a roommate in your head who's like constantly talking to you. Maybe that roommate is talking to you, Hung, like, you know, he's actually talking, hey, what's the next question that you should be asking based on this? Like, you know, you're probably like maybe 80% listening to me, which I really appreciate, like 20%, like your roommate is talking, okay, this is what I need to ask you next. So it's very hard to ask that roommate to shut off and say like, you know, this is how, you know, I'm viewing the world. So I think like, you know, coach and investing in mental health helps a lot in that.
You know what? I think your mind does race. And I think this even goes down to things like neuropsychology, but neurobiology, should I say, in the sense that if you practice being able to run multiple parallel process thoughts, if you like, which I think executives and CEOs need to do. It's one of their skills to be able to hold multiple ideas, multiple strands in parallel and kind of operate through. That rewires your brain in a certain way. You get better at doing those things the more you do them, but it might end up being that that structure in your brain now is an impediment in certain circumstances, like for instance the ability to step back and see the root motivation for your feeling in this way. And I think you're absolutely right, confirmation bias is something we all need to be aware of, as well as post hoc rationalization. There's a gut decision we know how to make, but then we spend all our mental energy explaining why it was not an emotional decision, which actually brings us to the product that you built, Vivek, because it's all about trying to find evidence, isn't it? I mean, your story was actually, is it all CEO stories are interesting, all people's stories are interesting, but you kind of come from almost a stereotypical fairy tale. Ex-engineer, got tired of how he was recruited and then set up a business to solve the problem type of story before, setting up a business that I think almost every software engineer would know. I mean, HackerRank is, in terms of brand presence within the tech community, I would say right up there. You can talk about the likes of Stack Overflow, GitHub, GitLab, but I would say HackerRank is not far or certainly within the ballpark of those businesses. So we're talking every developer knows you guys. So an amazing achievement. Tell us a little bit about that journey, Vivek. You were an ex-engineer. When did you realize, I'm tired of this. I want to build something.
Yeah, I think I would say it was almost like an accident that it happened. I used to work as a developer at Amazon before this, and I used to do a lot of technical interviews, which is where I found that resumes had a very poor correlation to skills. We unfortunately used to reject people who did not come from like good colleges, good schools, understandably so, in the sense that there wasn't a better way to filter, because like Amazon was a hot company back then as well. So you used to get like hundreds of resumes. So how do you actually go ahead and parse all of these things? But it's something felt wrong. Like, that's not the way that recruiting needs to be. And that was the trigger for me and Hari, my co-founder, to go ahead and start the company. But we did not have kind of huge aspiration or vision. I mean, it's always like, this is one thing, right? Which is like, you try to go back. It's very hard to go back and know clearly what you thought during that moment. You always like try to think that you were ambitious even back then, because you're continuing this journey, but it's very hard for you to go back and think that's hard to do. So if I had to try my best to do it, we really wanted this to be an extended side project that we used to do in college. We used to do a bunch of things in college. We didn't even have the company incorporated. We were so naive that we thought like, hey, why do you need to waste money in incorporating a company? Let's incorporate once we get some money from customers. And until then, we could probably ask them to transfer to our personal account, to our personal banking account, and then once we get to some threshold, then we can think about investing in incorporating fee and stuff. So it really started that way. And then, you just catch on to it. You see some traction, and this thing starts to get more and more real, and then you just take off. And now, yes, don't worry, we are now incorporated, we are a real company, we have people, we have payroll, now it's totally real and legit. Yeah,
well, all HackerRank subscriptions go to Vivek's personal accounts. Oh my goodness,
that can be an amazing clickbaity title, Hung. You'll just get unbelievable views and clicks for that.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? That's a wonderful story, because it's almost like the accidental journey, which I've come to believe that's so, it's almost so typical in many respects, that there's a lot of important decisions that are not strategic per se, in the sense that they haven't been plotted it wasn't a Napoleonic vision where you plotted out exactly how it was going to be, but there was an issue, there was an itch, you scratched it, and you just kept going down that path. And as you kept on going, you found sort of a seam, and that's when you know, it started snowballing and started moving forward. Tell us about the CEO side of it. I know you and Harry are really close. When you start a business, co-founding, always it's a partnership, right? But was there like any particular reason why the role definition shifted between you guys? Was it always obvious, for instance, you would be the CEO? How did all that happen?
Again, I'd say we were naive, and thankfully the naivety actually worked in our favor. Like a typical engineer, we approached this question of, we inverted this question to saying, hey, who should be the CTO? Because as a CEO, there's a CTO, who should be the CTO? And the CTO should be the person who's actually the better developer of the two, or like better programmer and who actually likes doing that. And that was clearly Hari by a huge, huge stretch. Okay, so if Hari is a CTO, then the other guy should be the CEO. And so that's how I became the CEO. And then like you just like continue on this journey, and then like you need to like go ahead and learn and things. And maybe there was also a natural inclination for me to sort of pitch to investors. There are probably certain things that came to me a little more naturally than Hari, and of course like he's way better developer than me, and that's also something that he liked doing. Hari is not the person who would probably like putting together like a presentation and things of those lines. He would much rather, like, given a choice. He would of course do it, but given a choice, he would much rather code than like, you know, trying to put together a presentation or a narrative or trying to align like a team and things of those lines. So it just happened naturally. And yeah, I'm embarrassed about a lot of decisions of how I made as a CEO. I continue to be embarrassed, which sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Bad because like you're doing a bad job. Good because like when you look back, you see like, wow, like I've grown a lot. Like I would never do that again, or I would do that in a much better way. It's a continuous learning.
Yeah, this is a great story, Vivek. I wonder whether many people might not know this, because again, as people know HackerRank, they know Vivek Ravishankar. So this kind of you letting us into this bit of history, I think is fascinating, and I think inspirational also, because there's a lot of people out there that are doing their work and they're finding opportunities, and I guess they must be questioning also possibility. You know, is it possible to get to these places? You know, without necessarily really being that, you know, stereotypical, I see it from, you know, miles away type of CEO. So there's all kinds of people that can be CEOs. Guess what I'm trying to say? All kinds of people can create successful businesses that are really global brands. So fantastic to hear all that. Let's dive into something you said that was really interesting, Vivek. You mentioned you and Harry, you know, as typical engineers. Do engineers make good CEOs? And what is the reason why that is a yes? And what is the reason why that might be a no?
Recently, it's starting to feel like engineers are, or the most successful CEOs have an engineering or developer background. I think success defined by like your market cap and the valuation of the company, I think Paul Graham, the founder of Y Combinator, tweeted something like this. Like, I don't remember, like 80% of the top 10 YC companies or top 20 YC companies or something like that had like the CEO from an engineering background or something. And then of course, like Twitter, there are always like a bunch of people who troll, like they ask, what about the last 20% or like, what about the remaining 20%? I don't think he responded to that. So I think it's, by the way, I'm a stereotypical path. It's not like mine is actually a unique path in any way. Like an engineer, like, you know, going and building a product and becoming a CEO is sort of like, you know, becomes more stereotypical right now. So to your question of why you will become, why you can become a better CEO, why you can, I think one thing that you could probably say is, engineering teaches you how to deconstruct problems into simpler problems. And most of the problems that you face as a CEO is very complex and ambiguous, that there is no clear right answer to it. Actually, there is no right answer to most problems. It's
the otherwise best it won't answer. Be a problem. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, the best answer that you can get to, given all the constraints, given whatever is going on, there is no absolute right answer. And for what it's worth, like, you know, you're not also going to make everyone happy with all of your decisions. Like, there's always going to be some piece that is not going to work really well for some cohort of your employees, or like, unfortunately, your customers or things on those lines, although you try to just like maximize whatever is possible to do that. So, and you're constantly thrown into this kind, these kinds of problems, which is it's ambiguous. It does not have a clear answer, and you need to like go ahead and like figure out how to build a solution. And just at the face of it, it's very easy to get overwhelmed by like, oh, how am I going to actually go ahead and solve this? And so the fact of you like continuing to code and build stuff teaches you to deconstruct this into like multiple sub problems that you can actually start to work on it. And of course, then you need to like layer on top of it with a little bit of your hunch, your gut, your intuition to go ahead and like get to the answer. So that's actually one way that it can actually help you become a better CEO. And the way that it cannot help is not everything in the company is analytical. And engineers tend to like, you know, analyze like things overboard than what is actually necessary. There is a level of, there is a level of qualitative aspect. There is a level of, there's a level of qualitative aspect that you should not ignore when you're like actually trying to build products or build companies and things. Like, for example, it's very easy to say A/B test everything that you do. Super data-driven, very good. But there's a level, I mean, it's a very, I would actually call it like a lazy person's answer, like to just say like go A/B test and see like, you know, what happens. I think there needs to be a level of qualitativeness added to it. There's like, you know, great products are not built by somebody who actually did like A/B test research. Like, there's a level of love. There's something that you just like emotionally feel very good about using products that you really love, which is very hard to like recreate it. So I would say there is the that aspect of it, you just need to constantly tune, hey, understand the analytical side, but there's like a lot of other things. And this is not just for product building. It's also like, you know, how do you deal with people? How do you manage people, your communication and things? So all that said, I think there is no playbook, really. There is just a lot of things that you need to just learn on the job and continue to get better. And you just like focused on continuing to get better as a person, as an individual. And there is no, by the way, any background can help. Like, you know, but if you ask this question on the other side, like I can actually flip the entire answer to say, how does a marketing background can actually go ahead and help? And I can actually give you like, you know, pros and cons for them. So the bottom line is it can help. There are pros, there are cons, but you need to like continuously learn. But given that most companies are product-oriented companies, technology companies, of course, having an engineering background like helps tremendously.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe when we talk about CEOs, we also need to contextualize it with regards to which type of company you're the CEO of. Because obviously there's a different set of things there. You might be, for instance, running a multi-product, multinational, you know, multi-brand business. That's a totally different play from handling, building product, constantly building product, which, you know, would not be a component of the other person's job. So that's...
I'll give you an example, Hung. Calendly, I'm blanking out on the CEO's name. The CEO was a salesperson before that. And you know, it was his personal problem. He just was tired on emailing back and forth on scheduling, rescheduling, changing stuff and things. And he just like pushed, man, like can there just be like one link that is just easy to schedule? Calendly is a $1 billion company right now. So, I mean, there is no playbook for building a successful company or like, you know, here's the right CEO. There's actually a really good book that made it more clearer for me. It's called The Score Takes Care of Itself. It's written by Bill Walsh. Fantastic book that actually,
the NFL coach.
Yeah, the NFL coach. And here's the thing. I have no idea. I've never even seen a football game. I don't even know the rules, but I love the book because it was about like leadership. And he analyzes like three coaches who are all very different in terms of their personalities, in terms of what they do and things, all very successful in their own right. Of course, there's a common denominator of like determination, will, and ability to inspire a team and others. He also talks about it. But it just like shows that there is no one type of person that you need to be to become a successful CEO or entrepreneur.
You know what? I think that's a really important message for people to hear, Vivek. And it's great that you've cited that example. We actually don't have to look too far to see those examples. We just have to remind ourselves that sometimes the people that are hyped up overly much are not necessarily the only exemplars that are there. There's loads of stories of very successful people with different techniques. I think the universe is just simply too complicated for there to be just a single template that's going to be universally effective in every circumstance. It's just such a complex mess. No one even has the first clue how it really all works together. So anybody can be a success. I think one of the things that is true, maybe if we can just dive into a wee bit of philosophy here, if you and me, Vivek, but perhaps being like true to your own kind of path is one of the things that is very, very important. Because I don't know whether you share with me this experience, but there's times in which I've deviated from my path because I thought logically it was the right thing to do, you know, just calculate the ROI and it, of course this is the right thing. And then you do it purely based on that. And then you end up fighting, you realize after a time you're fighting yourself a lot of the time. And even though you can get a modicum of success because you are strong-willed and you do have competence and you do have X, Y, Z, because you're still like half of you tugging the other half back, you'll never hit the optimal peak performance and deliver the peak result. So I think you got to know who you are. You got to know who you are at root. You know, that sense of centeredness and who you are, that's the rock solid foundation where you can never be disturbed. And your chances of success, I think, are exponentially greater if you hold on to that.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to be true to yourself. You need to be authentic to your style and make sure that you understand what your strengths are and you can actually augment the team around you to complement your weakness. That is absolutely critical. And unfortunately, we are just very enamored by, whenever people think of an entrepreneur, they only think of Steve Jobs, who of course, like, I have massive respect for whatever the person did. I did not get a chance to meet him in person or anything, but we always get fascinated by Steve Jobs and Zuckerberg, maybe because of Hollywood. They've just like made the movies popular and that's kind of what people think of. Whenever you think of CEOs, those are the two folks who come to your mind. And maybe now, like, it's a little bit of Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and others. They've all, like, you know, massive respect for whatever they've done. But just make sure that you are true to yourself and know that a lot of the stories that come out in PR are exaggerated, except for Hong Lee's podcast, except for yours.
We're going to go through a lot of post-production on this. Don't worry about it. We're going to make it sound what we want.
Even some of the stories that I've shared with like different media outlets come out differently. And I think, okay, you know what? Like it's exaggerated a bit. So what? So oftentimes we get attracted or allured by those kinds of stories and try to alter the way that we behave, that we think about it. Don't do that. I've done that. It's a terrible mistake. And I've since then been very, very conscious of being authentic to myself and to my strengths.
Do you know what, Vivek? That's one of the reasons why I try to do everything live. And when I first launched something like this, I never wanted to do a recorded and let's do the edit and let's send it back to the person to make sure you're happy with the edit and then have that person say, no, I want to say this instead. Can I re-record? And it's like, that's so unauthentic, and it isn't true. And we're spending time and effort saying things that aren't true. And I'm just thinking that can't be the way. Let's just like, we just got to be more robust and just go for it and be honest with what we're saying. And this is how it is. I think part of the reason why we love Clubhouse, everyone's diving into Clubhouse, going crazy over it. I think big part of it is because there's no post prod. It's like the dude is going to say what he's going to say, or she's going to say what he's going to say. It's happening. And that's what's exciting. That's what, you know, it's not manufactured. It's literally a human being sharing their thoughts. Suddenly we all become more forgiving. Because we recognize, you know what, no one's like policing. If we ask them to police their words in this way, then no one's going to say a damn thing. So everyone seems to be more forgiving there suddenly, which I think we need a bit more of that rather than, you know, always trying to have the perfect message and then condemning people that don't have that perfect message. Did you, I don't want to compare you to Bill Gates, Vivek, but Bill Gates did a Ask Me Anything on Reddit just, I think, a couple of days ago. I don't know whether you caught it. And he's great at Reddit. He does genuinely respond. And some person obviously asked him, Bill, do you still code? Bill said, yeah, in the sense that he doesn't actually do anything production, but he occasionally hacks around with stuff. Vivek, do you still code? No is okay, but do you still do it?
No, I think there is a level of coding, but even I cringe to call that coding. So I would actually say no.
That's more or less what Bill Gates said. He said that basically he works and hacks around with the no-code stuff. So obviously there's loads of apps that are being produced these days that, you know, are trying to push app development, if you like, out of the engineering world and into, you know, the world of marketing or product or whatnot. And he's coding, quote unquote, around that. But obviously it's not production quality code in any way. Do you miss it, Vivek, that style of work? I mean, is that a lifestyle that you know, you can imagine, or sometimes in some sort of alternative timeline, Vivek is still an engineer somewhere?
Yeah, I don't know if I actively miss it. Coding is one of those things where you can get into your zone or in a flow state very quickly compared to any other activities. And it's an amazing state to be in if you're able to get into that. It's one of those things where you just like don't see time pass by and you're just like fully deep down and you're just enjoying. It's very hard to get that kind of a state now for any activity that I do, because I mean, right after this, there's another fire that's actually come up, and like, you know, you need to like go ahead and do it. It's very hard to get into a state of flow. I try to do that. Maybe I have like chunks of time every quarter or every month or allocated to do like a retrospective to just like look at things objectively and things where I'm able to get into the flow state, or when I'm probably reading a book or something. But coding just allows you to get into that pretty quickly. So during those times, I do miss it, but I have not. It's not like actively that I've missed coding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely fair enough. It is a different activity. I've done a little bit of coding in my past, like way, way, way back when. Enough for me to know I would never be anything other than a mediocre coder, which is why I stopped. But it is a very different.
I will tell you what I miss though. I miss being very closely involved with product building. I am involved, but I'm not at the level of depth that I used to be, which is looking at the little things, nuances, and brainstorming with ideas and things of those lines. I started to probably revive a bunch of those things maybe over the last 2 to 3 months. That is something that I do miss. It's not exactly coding, it's related to that, but like just getting super deep on product building. That is something that I miss.
Yeah, and but as a CEO, you have to let that go, don't you? Because you don't have the time per se, and you've got so many other responsibilities to handle.
I'm not sure about that. It's a good question. I mean, it's really a question of the depth in terms of like, you know, where do you want to be in the product building? I mean, there are like CEOs. Again, this is like you should be authentic to yourself in terms of what is your strength and like, you know, what you can augment. But just in the spirit of an example. Elon Musk sits on every design review, every design review for every single thing at Tesla. And like, you know, where the belief is more like, hey, the product is everything. Like once you actually nail that, distribution and everything actually takes care of itself. Doesn't mean that you're undervaluing that, but like know that like the product is everything. So there are like different schools of thought on that. I would say the level of depth that I was involved in just like the product building in, let's say, 2019 was less, or like in 2020 was slightly more than 2019. In 2021 so far is more than 2020. And it's something that I enjoy. And I also think it's something that is going to benefit the product team overall. And I think overall, it's also going to benefit the company. So it's actually like a win-win-win across all scenarios. So that's probably something that I do miss. I would like to go deeper, but then there are probably some constraints in terms of like the org structure that you've constructed, and that's where it comes like, hey, all the other things also that you're responsible for. So then there's a trade-off on like how much deep do you want to go, sacrificing other pieces of the business.
You talk about product, Vivek, so we might as well dive into it. What is the state of HackerRank right now? I mean, it's been a little while since I had a really close look. I mean, obviously, we know what core product is. It is tech assessment, online tech assessment for software engineers across almost any kind of discipline. And it's being able to take those results and aggregate it, sort of compare it across a global aggregate of people who've done it, So you can say, hey, this engineer actually performs in this quartile of all of the people who've conducted that test. So it gives you some objective data on it. So core proposition is that. What else is going around the edges of the product, and where is the roadmap looking for this year, Vivek?
Our strategy at the for the company is called Development Lifecycle Management. And like the name suggests, it is to build products that span across the entire lifecycle journey of a developer. And we split it into three phases. We call the first phase the pre-hire phase, which is enabling a developer to prepare and apply for a job. We have a massive developer community, which is today over 11 million registered developers. Millions of them are active every month, where we actually have thousands of challenges for a developer to come in, like hone their skills to prepare for a job. So that's the first phase, and we're continuing to develop. The second phase is the hiring phase, where we build tools and solutions for companies to source, screen, interview, and benchmark developers before they're able to make an offer, giving them confidence the hire that you're making, which is where like we actually got started. And we're continuously enhancing our sourcing, screening, interviewing, all these solutions to do it. And the third phase is what we call as the post-hire phase, which is once a developer joins an organization, helping a developer understand what skills do you have, where are the gaps, how can you continue to upskill yourself, and building other internal mobility solutions and offering. That is what I would probably call it in very early stages, but we are actually starting to work with a lot of customers on that as well. And all of these products are connected by a common platform called the Skill Platform, which means that every one of these products at the core, USP, has something to do with skills as a differentiator. And because everything is built on a common platform, they're also synergistic, which means tomorrow you could imagine a company or our customer understanding the skill sets of the org internally and using the data to plan for what they need to do in hiring. These are the two different phases in the strategy. So that's an example of a synergy or a vision for synergy, if you may. So those are all the areas that we're developing, and we're consistently moving investment across all three areas: pre-hire, hire, post-hire. Very, very exciting. I think we're going to have a massive product suite by the end of the year, and or rather, we're continuously building it. And a very, very exciting journey.
It sounds that way. And I can absolutely see how, you know, we're connecting as you're almost providing that network to help companies, to help the candidates through the life cycle. Because previously, these are just very siloed experiences. So we can see these things kind of starting to stitch together, which is fantastic. There's two areas I want to talk on, the pre-hire and this development. I think they're really interesting to sit on and explore a little bit. I think one of the things that HackerRank have done amazingly well is to almost, you know, is to create this community, the marketplace, as well as create the product. It's one of, I think, probably engineering is one of the very first segments that have done this. You go back to the likes of Stack Overflow, for instance, starting off as a Q&A side, big old community, and then they develop into a screening software and assessment tool, sort of a sourcing tool, should I say. And it seems that there's a change in terms of how we think about markets now. It's like we need to build community, actually, because without the community, you can't really be a business in this space. How do you build a community of 11 million people? Like, what is, apart from providing the products, what else do you need to do to make sure that community is thriving, growing, healthy, and safe?
One thing that we've done in a good way, I would say, is we have focused a lot on organic growth, which means we actually don't run ads to acquire developers. We run all our marketing budget, demand gen, and everything goes towards acquiring businesses to use our solutions, and nothing on developers. And so we've been, I don't know if it was just a happenstance or if it was like actually a strong strategy that we started off with. Nevertheless, what it has done is to make sure that you focus on delivering an amazing value to developers. And we, early on, we had like different cohorts of developers, people who want to come to the site to learn how to code, people who want to just like show off that I have these skills, bragging rights, people who want to like prepare for jobs. And we had like different cohorts. And now we've just like zeroed in on super deeply focusing on helping a developer who's a job seeker make sure that you are really well prepared, and we help you increase the odds of you getting a job offer. So that's the area that we've just like focused on and we're working on. That's our main persona. And yeah, we're continuing to make really good improvements. Like, for example, in a few weeks, you're going to see a new version of an interview prep kit. We're curating I think I would say hand-curated set of problems based upon the time that you have for the next interview. So if you have like a week, your interview is a week away, this is your kit. If your interview is a month away, here's your kit. If your interview is 3 months away, here's your kit. And then like, you know, we're also like working on making sure that we can have like company specific curated kits as well. What if you're preparing for Uber? Like, can we actually have something like that? So there's a lot of exciting work that we're actually doing on the community side to make sure that it's a great experience for a job seeker to prepare and apply for a job.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, there's a demand for this also, right? I mean, there's the preparation and there's also the research required to do the preparation, which when you think about it, it's a complete waste of time. You want to understand whether this person is capable of doing the job. So let's get to that point as soon as possible. That's amazing that you've managed to acquire, and I don't like to use the term acquire, I don't think you do either, but 11 million people who are voluntarily coming in and entering into the HackerRank experience is an amazing number. So well done on that. Tell me a little bit more about sort of what happens at the back end of it. So the other side is the development. So the person's been hired. You're saying you're providing a toolkit or a platform to help the developer better understand their market value, let's say, or their skills development, or where they happen to be in their to their peer group. Is this something that is owned by the client company, or is this something that is independent of the client company that the developer accesses without necessarily the employer knowing about it?
We're it's a really good question. We're in the early stages of building the product, and our vision is there is probably some metadata of work that you do within your company that can be exported and have it as part of your public profile, which is like, you know, just owned by the developer. And there's like a good amount of data that has to be within the premises of the company, which is like owned by the company in the post-hire world. We haven't yet gotten to that piece of it. We're now today working with a couple of customers, really good customers, very forward-thinking, innovative customers on this product. I'll definitely keep you updated on how it goes, because I think it can be game-changing for the industry. You can call this bragging, but like we changed the way that developers are assessed on skills with our screening. We changed the way developers do interviews online with pair programming. Before that, like I got a job at Amazon where I had to read code on the phone, and it wasn't too long ago. It was like, you know, less than a decade ago. And then like people started to use Google Docs and others for collaborative coding. We completely changed the game on collaborative coding. And we haven't yet changed the game on the developer sourcing, which is kind of like, you know, what we're working on. And we are working on also changing the game of the whole developer upskilling and mobility. So these are like real strong inventions or game-changing things that we're going to bring to the market. Those are very, very exciting things for us to work on.
No doubt. And also you can see that, sticking close to the ethic of developer first kind of mentality, I think it can pay a huge dividend here. Because I can imagine when you talk about labor mobility, developers are going to be one of the parts of the economy that's really going to be the leading edge of that, I think. And I'm kind of pouring towards this idea of how the world is looking like as we now starting to glimpse it, you know, the squashed down super flat world, work from anywhere, distributed working. All of this is very pro developer in my view, because suddenly you have a scenario where we did a bit of research about 5 years ago where we surveyed developers, you know, what did you want? One of the questions was, okay, you know, location, you know, what is the working conditions on location, on-premise, remote, or either or? And obviously all the developers, almost all of them, like 99.9% said, of course, we want either or. They wanted optionality. And now optionality is here, because it's going to be very hard for a company to say, you know what, on-premise, you're coming here, no questions asked, you have to do it. That's going to immediately constrain that company's ability to recruit a software engineer. Yep. So You want to be competitive, you're going to start loosening the requirement of location for the job. These jobs are going to start floating around, and suddenly the world, as you say, has changed. In that type of situation, Vivek, where do you see technology providers, if you like, supporting businesses to handle that? I mean, do we have the infrastructure in place to deal with distributed software engineering teams? How do we assess distributed working? Is it the same? Like, for instance, we do pair programming. Typically, that is, you know, the model is the person sitting next to each other. Is pair programming the same if they're in physically different locations? Or are there different mental strains and do we need different tests? What are your thoughts on all of that? World is entirely distributed, let's imagine. How does HackerRank respond or see potential sort of products down the line?
Yeah, COVID has definitely changed quite a bit. It has accelerated a lot of trends that we were expecting that it would take like a decade or more to do it. And there's a famous adage, talent is distributed everywhere, but opportunity is not. And that is starting to be more and more false based on the whole idea of you can actually work from anywhere. And it's also influenced tremendously by large companies like Facebook, Square, Coinbase. When I say large, like fast-growing companies, as well as like, you know, the fangs of the world, making a stand saying that, hey, we are going to be a remote first kind of an environment. Because when large companies make a stance like that, then they quote unquote have an unfair access to talent pool, which none of the competitors want. And because everybody's fighting for like, you know, how do I hire as many high quality developers as fast as possible in all these large companies that are actually growing. And so if these large companies take a stance, then actually that forces like, you know, everybody else also to take a stance. And so like the entire world is moving more and more to like kind of approaching a remote first kind of environment or workplace, which I think is very good overall, because like I mentioned, talent is distributed everywhere, but opportunity was not, but is now starting to happen. In terms of like the tools, there needs to be more work. I think there needs to be more innovation that needs to happen. I don't think it's as simple as just like replacing every meeting that you had with just like a Zoom meeting or a WebEx meeting or others. I think it's a good start. I would actually think of this as an interim solution. And I'm pretty sure the Zooms and the WebExes of the world, as well as like new companies are actually working on to figure out, hey, how do you make the collaboration or how do you make yourself feel closer to the company or to closer to the other person, even if you're in a virtual setting? So there's a lot of work that needs to happen. Zuckerberg yesterday announced or said something, I'm paraphrasing, I might be off on this, but the coolest thing that we're working on is on the augmented reality lab, AR lab. It's the one that we're actually working on the greatest things. So I don't know if there is like, you know, other innovations that even Facebook is pushing their envelope on trying to do this. I know Facebook has been big on VR, but they're also now starting to do AR as well. And Apple has been big on AR. So there's like more things that needs to get built if you need to make the remote working really a norm. But I think interim, like humans are great at adjusting to the environment. I mean, we are all born with the survival of the fittest gene. That's how we are all born. So we always think we'll try to figure out and survive whatever comes and hits us. But there's more to build. There's absolutely more to build. That just opens up like a whole new paradigm of innovation.
You know what? I think coding is going to be different. Like there's going to be new coding paradigms emerge from distributed working. Because even in companies that were remote first, the default is still, you know, the language was built, products were originally built, that the canonical products that drove, this is how you build products in this framework, were all built with a team sitting together. Now, if we go to a remote sort of only world, let's say, we're going to find new ways to working that are optimized for that type of structure, which is probably less synchronicity, for instance, even perhaps less value in terms of that cultural fit, quote unquote, because if you're physically less proximate, there's going to be less requirement for the need to, you know, get on in the same kind of, you know, visceral way. So I think it's a fascinating sort of moment for us and exciting for a lot of companies. I do think that the pressures for companies to embrace it are going to be much higher than the impediments, because I'm sure employers are now seeing, you know what, we could suddenly ramp up our engineering team, because if we get remote right, we've opened up the world for talent rather than having to compete against Facebook for, you know, Silicon Valley engineering, you know, whatever ridiculous number that is there. So super interesting on that side. Okay, how has remote affected HackerRank as an organization, Vivek? What's the current policy there, and how have you, as a CEO, managed it? What have you learned from this moment?
I did not expect remote to go as well as it has on HackerRank. I think the way that we have rallied around and ability to just like operate as though everything, we're all just like working in offices, has been very, very impressive. And like kudos to the team who's actually done this. We've also done a lot of changes within the organization in terms of making sure that we can have like remote first work really well. Then that can include a range of things from just like improving your benefits program, making sure that we're actually pushing a lot of asynchronous communication, pushing for like better documentation in engineering. And also just like even we have opened up our talent pool. You know, we are not like restricted to it. Like, you know, the last two hires that we actually made was one was from Florida, another person was from Michigan, across not engineering, but like, you know, across other organizations. So we've also sort of like expanded the pool. So, I mean, it's in general, like, you know, we've really embraced remote first as a company.
You know, again, that's fascinating that you can cite personal example, also say company example, Vivek, because, you know, that's really going to help the category as well, isn't it? The idea that we no longer are recruiting in proximate, how much of hiring really was all about, hey, I eyeball that person and I get along with them, therefore that's a yes. Let's imagine that has gone, and suddenly we need to replace that with other confidence building measures, for a better of another term. We need to replace the data we got from that sort of face-to-face interaction with other stuff, and it will be assessment tech of different types, including, of course, technical testing, like what you guys do. Okay, we're coming to the end of the interview, Vivek. So I just want to throw a few sort of wilder questions at you at society level. Let's zoom out and see where we're at. Okay. There's been a huge amount of talk. So COVID-19, obviously devastating economically. We have fringe ideas moving from left field to mainstream, seriously being considered, one of which is UBI, Universal Basic Income. Thoughts on that? Good idea, not a good idea. Give us an answer on that, Vivek.
Good idea. I don't know the timeline. I don't know if it's going to be in our generation, but definitely good idea. Something that we need to work on. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the only solution. We need to give people a baseline, because what else is the other option? Like, society has no choice. Yeah. It's a bad choice or a terrible, terrible outcome. So let's go for the least worst outcome. Okay, you talked about Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk before. From a personal preference point of view, you're looking at a CEO. Who do you prefer as a CEO? Just, you know, no need to explain, but which one of those two do you think, you know, yeah, that's more my guy?
Jeff Bezos.
I'm the same. I do feel the same. Probably because of his two pizza rule, by the way. You know, because I'm a big hater of meetings. So his idea of, you know what, let's get rid of this ridiculous ritual and let's just get down to work, I think is absolutely spot on. What about things that have been in the news lately? Non-fungible tokens. Jack Dorsey sold his first tweet. Did you know? He sold his first tweet earlier this week for $2.9 million. How is that even possible? What do you think of NFTs? What do you think of blockchain?
It's crazy. I think very highly of blockchain. Yeah, I think it's a great technology. I mean, it solves a real computer science problem in a very elegant way. It's the, it's the Byzantine general problem. So it's a real CS problem that it solves. I'm also a big proponent of alternative currency, whether that is Bitcoin or Ether. I think it's especially the rate at which Ethereum is the platform is generally getting built is very impressive. So I'm all for blockchain. I am also all for alternative currency. I just don't know this NFT. It's crazy. It's kind of pretty crazy on that. Like, maybe I'm not educated, or I'm not like well educated enough to answer that. To me, it sounds crazy. Like, why would you want to get? Can't you just have the screenshot of first tweet? I don't know. Like, you know, that should be good enough. I can frame it right here for free. So I don't fully understand. Yeah.
No, and they are big. They're more intelligent people, like people genius level, that are criticizing NFTs as a big scam. So I totally think you're in good company to be a critic of it. But I think it probably is. There's a lot of the same reasons why NFTs, I think, are popular. Same reason why art generally is popular. It's an irrational thing, but potentially a store of value that better than cash, right? You know, if I have $5 million, what am I going to do with it? Yeah, there's too much cash floating around. It's going to go to stuff like this. Vivek, actually, we forgot one thing, which is super important. I wanted to touch on the hiring maturity model that you're kind of experimenting with. And I think you're going to do something with soon. So it's on your website. And you're basically saying to companies, you know what? You need to benchmark your hiring maturity model. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What does that mean? And what do you intend to do with it?
This started off as a project internally, and then we validated with like a lot of our customers to say, hey, we have a lot of data about like how different customers use our different products in ways, and we love to sort of expose that not in an individual way, but more in like an aggregated way, and also help you understand where you stand across these benchmarks that we have laid out, and what are some of the things that you can do to continue to get better at it. It started off really as like an idea validated with customers, and now we're like, you know, getting thousands of responses, which are actually going to reveal in our upcoming main event happening in May, in terms of both the results and in terms of like, you know, what we can do to get customers continuing to up their game on the maturity model curve across different dimensions. Yeah, so it's started up, it's working pretty well, and I'm looking forward to sharing the results. Even I don't know the results, so I'm looking forward to learning myself and then like, you know, sharing with the rest of the world.
You know, one thing that I think is, and you guys get this right with your amazing survey, by the way, I think if anybody who's in tech hiring really needs to pay attention to HackerRank's annual, it's one of the classic annuals, in my opinion, like you have to read it, it's fantastic. But essentially, nobody knows what a good number is. We're relying on vendors or companies that have market-wide view to tell us what the benchmark is. And the hiring maturity model is basically a survey, 5-question survey, that's going to help you essentially plot where you are in terms of what other where in relation to other businesses. This will be stuff like, how do you create a job, for instance? Are you copying, pasting? Like, have you ever used, do you use the copy paste function when you create a job?
Yeah.
Or are you getting, you know, that in itself is one of the questions, right? So those things will determine where you're at on hiring maturity, and it will impact things like quality of hire, impact things like diversity of hire and how you can expand the talent pool on that side. Lots of really interesting things. Cost you 5 questions and 60 seconds to do it. So I recommend you give it a shot. Vivek Ravisankar, you've been an amazing guest. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. I'm sure I could continue. We can have another 2-3 hours chat for sure. But it's been great having you on Founders Focus. I feel guilty that you've missed lunch, so please go and grab a sandwich or something before you get on with your day. Final question for you before I let you go. What CEO things are you going to be doing for the rest of the day?
Yeah, I think you broke a bit, but like, thank you so much, Hung, for like inviting me to this. Like, really, really enjoy the session. And I will have lunch right after this. But thank you so much.
Go and grab the sandwich. Vivek Ravisankar, take care.
Thank you.
Wasn't that a great chat, everybody? What a cool guy. And good luck to Vivek and everything he does. He's one of the good guys in the business.